We'll continue our Good Operating Techniques series with a public service angle in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the once again well-lit halls of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this RAIN report. Public service is the cornerstone of amateur radio's long-term survival. If you have participated in a public service event, you have very likely encountered poor communications between the event organizers, net control station, and the ham radio participants. There are various ways to avoid the inevitable chaos and confusion that can result. Tony Pozzola, W2BEJ, is a former ARRL Section Emergency Coordinator for Eastern New York. He has developed some strategies for getting the most cooperation from the non-hams involved in these events. In the third installment of our Good Operating Techniques Refresher series, we'll hear an excerpt from a 2011 Dayton Hamvention Forum talk by Tony. The forum was moderated by Mitch Stern, W1SJ. The first voice you'll hear is Tony's.
We have to remember one of the golden rules Mitch said at the beginning. The reason ham radio exists is for us to provide a public service in the event of an emergency or even a non-emergency. Our public service is what keeps us alive. It keeps us from getting our frequencies taken away and everything else. Our second thing is we have to remember when we are working for non-hams, we are literally working for them. We are not running the event. We are only providing the service that they require. And the service that they require is constantly changing. Many years ago, going back into the 60s and 70s of the Vietnam War, one of the greatest things ham did was to relay messages to the servicemen overseas. Well, now with the event of the cell phone service, we don't have to do that anymore. We provide a more unique situation. We have to provide what they require. And that takes a special effort because sometimes we know a good way to do things or a better way to do things, and they're not quite up to our speed yet. We have to kind of set back and let them do their things. I can tell you a couple of funny stories. Puts it all into perspective. Mitch mentioned about accuracy. Enunciate, talk slow, be precise. Very important when you're in emergency situations, because now you have people and organizations that are not hams depending, very importantly, as to what you say and what you do. And we had a ham recently from New York, went down to help out with the floods down in Louisiana and the Mississippi River. Unfortunately, he had a jealous wife that wanted to know what he was doing all the time, where he was, who he was with, and the only way to keep her appeased was he would send her messages. And he got down in some areas, and there's no way to communicate. Cell towers were down, the areas had no power, and he was in a FEMA team that was like the first people in. So he got on one of the ham radio nets and sent the message. And it was kind of a joke to his wife. The message read, "Having a great time, wish you were here." The message got back to the wife exactly as he sent it, except the last E was left off. One dit was left off, and the wife got the message, "Having a great time, wish you were her." So you got to be precise. Roles change all the time. I do a lot of work for Mars, and I do a lot of work for the Red Cross, Salvation Army. I'll hit you with the second funny story. Everybody here has flown in an airplane. Everybody knows what TSA is, right? They can communicate amongst themselves, but you know that TSA cannot talk from airport to airport. They have no means of communications to go outside of that airport. They realized that they needed some type of communications, so they decided they were going to utilize the Mars people, the military affiliate or the military auxiliary, and have some of their key agents become Mars member. This way they could set up an HF station at the airport and then in times of emergency be able to communicate back and forth. One minor glitch. In order to be a Mars operator, you have to be a ham first. So now there's a whole bunch of TSA brass. I mean, I'm talking epaulets and gold stars and badges and stuff. They had to get their ham license. So they assembled 24 of the top brass of the TSA in Albany, New York, all over the Northeast, be the first group to get their technician class ham license and then apply for their Mars. Their mistake was they called me to administer the exam. because I deal with these people all the time, not only TSA, but other people. So I went in to give the exam, and I had a friend of mine with me. We had a big Rubbermaid gray bin. In it was all the exams, the answer sheets, the keys, the pens, the papers, all the stuff needed to give the exam, the successful completion things. So he says, I'm sorting out the papers, tell them what's going to happen. So I looked at him and I said, this looks like the Pentagon here. These guys are all brassed up and everything else. They're all sitting at attention, all ready to take this exam. They're all gung-ho. I said, you know, these guys could be Marine generals. Then realizing who they were, I looked around and I said, can I have your attention, please? I'm about to give the exam for technician class amateur radio operators, as authorized by the Federal Communications. Before I can begin, I want each and every one of you, please take off your shoes. Put all your personal belongings into this gray bin. If you have any liquids more than 3 ounces, I want in a clear... The room went silent. And when the first person bent down to start taking off his shoes, I said, no, that's not required, but part of it, I just want you to see how it feels. They all laughed and they all passed, and we now have a nice HF station set up at the airport, and we do exercises and everything else. I also work heavily with the Red Cross. The Red Cross is one of these organizations that's got paperwork and forms for everything. But one of the good things is they're usually the first people on the scene. When you get a bad tornado and there's nothing left, there's no power, there's no water, there's no cell phone, there's no computer use, there's no internet, there's no nothing, they come in with a van called an ECRV. They pop up that satellite dish, they aim it to the satellite, which connects to an area that's not affected. Now we got a broadband signal. We can issue computers, cell phones, radios, VoIP, and everything else. We brought that whole area technically back online. But again, working with the non-hams, FEMA, State Emergency Management, ARES, RACES people, you got to conform. So everybody does it different. Everybody has their own way of doing it. Now we have a new thing. There's a national group, Homeland Security, that wants everything to run under NIMS. So everything is running the same. The terminology is the same. Everything is common to one another. But the important thing is jumping through these various hoops gets you to become a better operator because you have to now go with the flow. You have to improvise. And that helps you learn how to get yourself in and out of different predicaments. They come up, they don't know how you're going to get the message through. They just want to know, we need 50 more cots. Get the message through. And that's the way to go. So working with emergencies, with non-hams, with various agencies is very important. It's almost like working a contest. You have to practice. You have to exercise. You have to get routines so they're second nature to you. Very important to be able to work good with the non-hams.
You're in the midst of our third installment on good operating techniques, presented by former Eastern New York ARRL Section Emergency Coordinator Tony Pozzola, W2BEJ, and forum moderator Mitch Stern, W1SJ, a veteran public service net controller and avid contester DXer in his own right. The Rain Report is heard on Twitter at #TheRainReport, on iTunes, and on the web on demand at therainreport.com. It is also available in repeater-friendly format on Monday evenings at 7 p.m. Central Time on Echolink as part of the Amateur Radio Information Net on the K5WLR-L link.
You are listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
So to sum up public service and emergency communications, we've got a bunch of questions, and there's no right or wrong answer, but it's just like thinking-type questions. So the first one, if you're called into action, is your equipment ready and your batteries charged? Well, of course, it's a flea market weekend. You probably have all that stuff ready, but normally, you're ready to roll. I checked my battery last night. It wasn't charging. Oh, my God, I better charge this thing because I'm going to need it all day. But I hear from a lot of people, my HT's not charged. I'm not ready. If power and phone were out for weeks, would you be able to communicate? Would you be able to charge your batteries even? Can the repeater that you use and it's part of your whole emergency plan, can it stay on for over a week without commercial power? We learned a big lesson with that big blackout in the Northeast, which started out here somewhere out in Cleveland and went all the way across New York. And fortunately, somebody in Vermont wasn't asleep and kicked out the plug before we went down too. So we got to see the whole thing on TV. They had all these Aries and emergency Racies repeaters all through New York City and state. They all kicked onto battery backup and they all lasted about 4 or 5 hours and they all subsequently died because there was no more battery. So what's the plan? In fact, the Aries repeater didn't even have a battery. People were trying to talk to each other on simplex. It was a real mess. Do you have ways to power your radios and charge your batteries without power? Well, I'll charge it off the car. Well, do you have ways of getting gas into the car? And the big one here is, would you be emotionally able to help if a disaster struck your area directly? Generally, the answer is no. That's why they have jump teams come in from out of the area into a stricken area, because you're dealing with kind of like your family and the fact that, you know, your house has just floated downriver or something like that. That's the whole business with emergency communication. Now we ask that question, how do I become a better operator? And the tool we use is contesting. So how does this work? Why do you do contesting? First, it is a lot of fun. And I'll tell you that 30, 40 years ago, a friend of mine said, let's do some contests. And I go, what do you want to do that for? This is hello, goodbye stuff. I mean, what's the point of that? And so, well, let's just give it a try. And I did. And you talk about getting a rare communicable disease. I mean, ever since then now, it's like, I got a contest. When's the next contest? It's a great way to meet many people. You say, well, how do you meet people? You just go give them 5-9. I says, well, I have guys I meet once a year in the contest, and you learn how to summarize your life in the last year in one sentence or less. It is an art form. How you doing? Yeah, the kids got married this year. Great. You know, I put up a new antenna. How about you? Blah, 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 blah. Okay, thanks. Here's that contest. Like that. If you want further information, we meet in the suites tonight in Dayton. That's where we tell the long version of the story. It's a great way to work new countries and states. Now, when I say this, I work all states in 24 hours all the time when I do a contest. DXCC, yeah, in a weekend. Okay. What do I use for an antenna? A tri-bender at 50 feet. Nothing special. But if you're on for the contest and everybody's on, you can do that. So if you like collecting cards and wallpaper, this is a great way to do it. And it's really the best way to hone your skills, because if you keep making contact after contact, by God, you're going to get good at it after a while. On an average year, I make about 6,000, 7,000 contacts between the various contests I do, and I've been doing this for 30 years. So making contacts, I kind of know what works and what doesn't work. You kind of learn these things, that getting mad at somebody doesn't work. I check with the contest group in the league, and they don't give you extra points for getting into a fight with somebody over the air. I said, well, can I get a couple? No, you can't do that. So I don't fight with people. They do their thing. I just go about my business because there's no gain in it. So what is a contest? In case you haven't heard, you know, some people here know all these guys just talking on top of each other. It's not. There's really an organization to this. And the organization is this. You contact the most number of stations in the most number of defined areas in a certain time limit. So by defined areas, it could be ARRL sections. It could be states. It could be grid squares, countries, counties, Russian Oblast, whatever it is in the particular contest, that's usually a multiplier, and you multiply the number of stations, and then the contest is going to run a certain number of hours. That's what it really boils down to. Now, here's the kicker. You got to accurately exchange and log information, because when you submit your log, guess what? They put it in a giant database, and if you miscopy something, they know it. And what the computer does is it draws a big red line through it, and you lose the contact. So it behooves you to get it right the first time. So each contest has a specific set of rules. They're all a little bit different, and you got different types. Are you on HF or VHF? Now, this is important because if you're a technician, you can't go on HF unless you visit, let's say, at field day. But you can certainly do VHF, and VHF contests can be pretty interesting. You find yourself a nice high spot, and you go up there, you get on 2 meters and 6 meters. There's quite a few contacts to be made doing that. And if you get an opening, like a sporadic opening on 6 meters, oh boy, that's just a ton of fun. And then is it phone or CW or mixed mode or other modes? Well, most people like to do phone, but some people like to do CW. I'm not a CW operator. That's not my native mode, but I can go on CW and do very well because I've been doing CW for many years in contests. I can't talk to people as a rag chew because I got to sit there and like write everything down and I lose interest after a while. But in a contest, it's call sign exchange. So I have just enough mental capacity to get that information, type it into the computer, and move on. Some people just do PSK-31 contests or RIDI contests or something like that. I mean, some people have these unique modes, and it's great because everyone who does that mode is out that weekend. You'll run into them somewhere. And then is it a DX contest where you're talking to the world or it's just stateside? Stateside contests are great because you don't need much of an antenna. Usually a wire antenna, maybe a small tri-bander, which is what I have. I can do as well as anybody. DX contests, if you want to compete with the big boys, you kind of need the aluminum in the air, very much high in the air to compete. But you know what? I can make a lot of noise with a small antenna too. And how long is the contest? Well, the big DX contests are 48 hours. That's a real grind. That's a lot of work. 24 hours, a little bit more tolerable. And then they got these sprints that run either 12 hours or 4 hours. That may be something more to your liking. It's not as crazy. So the basics, there's many different ways to participate. So you got to ask yourself, what's my goal here? Really important to have a goal. Just getting on handing out contacts, that's fine. But really, it's more important. What do I want to accomplish? I want to win the section. I want to make 200 contacts and stop. I want to just do whatever I can and see where it falls out, whatever it is. Because here's the important thing. You don't quit. Whatever that goal is, you stick with it. And I'll give you an example. So I do the sweepstakes every year. And one year, I just couldn't get it together. I wasn't making the contacts. I got bumped off my frequency. The tuna was arcing over. I mean, it was a Murphy weekend. The competition was running way ahead of me. Sweepstakes is a nasty contest in that everyone gives their serial number so you know how your competition's doing. And you can get very much psyched out. And I was psyched out. I said, I ain't going to win. I was writing my concession speech on Sunday. That's what I was doing. And I said, well, I'll just do it. I mean, I'm here. The tubes are warmed up. I might as well finish the contest, but this ain't going to happen. You know what? I passed them on the last hour. I don't know how the heck this happened. He don't know how the heck it happened, but it did. Why did it happen? Because I didn't quit. And think about it, but the parallel is if you're doing a public service event or you're doing an emergency. In emergencies, you may have to operate for many hours because there's no relief help. Okay, everything is falling down. The generator keeps conking out. The weather is terrible. I mean, things aren't great, but you know that you have to keep operating because you're the only one providing communications. Well, you're going to do that, right? So you have to have that attitude of, this is the job, I'm going to do it. And the fact that we have all this bad stuff going on, we're going to put that aside and concentrate on the fact that I need to communicate.
This has been part three of our four-part examination of good operating techniques focusing on emergency communications. This week we featured Tony Pezzola, W2BEJ, former ARRL Section Emergency Coordinator for Eastern New York. You also heard from avid Vermont contester and DXer, as well as an experienced public service net control station, Mitch Stern, W1SJ. We'll conclude this series next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, who brought home more than 70 hours of forum audio from the 2015 Hamvention, will soon begin bringing your way. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com, via iTunes and via Twitter at #TheRainReport, and also available on Echolink Monday evenings at 7 p.m. Central Time on the K5WLR-L link.